Welcome to Adequate Yearly Progress, Episode 1. My name is Erin Sterling, and I'm the librarian at Eckstein Middle School in Seattle, Washington. I'm super excited to actually get this going because I've thought about it for a while, and now here it is. What I'm going to do is interview different teachers and find out why they became a teacher and what they like about it and what they don't like about it. And that's pretty much it. I'm really excited about this first episode because I get to interview my mom. Yes, my mom, one of the very best teachers I know. She is my muse, my inspiration, the one I turn to for any sort of creative inspiration, period. But you'll find out. All right, let's go. Hi, Mom. I'm glad you're on my show. For everyone listening, this is Cora Sterling. She is a former ESL and Spanish teacher for both elementary school and adults, and is currently the executive director and founder of Literacy Lab, which we might talk about later. She lives in Florida and New York at this time being. So, Mom, will you tell me about yourself and why you became a teacher?
Well, I first became a teacher because I had a German degree, which I couldn't get a teaching job, so I went into ESL, which was connected at the time to people who like to learn languages.
Cool. And then what did you go into first? So I started out,
I got a degree in German, which at the time there were no German, there were no German teaching jobs at all in 1976. So I quickly went back to school and got a degree so that I could teach English as a second language.
Okay.
And that's how I started teaching.
Okay. And did you teach it adults or elementary?
I taught it mainly young adults and adults in general. I was at an institute of ESL. It wasn't a great job. It didn't pay much. It was fun. I had a lot of students from all over the world. And a lot of good experiences. And then we went to Japan, where I taught ESL there for a couple years.
Okay. And then you then became a Spanish teacher, right?
Well, so then, then I actually did a lot of teaching that was through church, through teaching Sunday school, through doing Girl Scouts and Cub Scouts. And a lot of that was just like teaching. You know, you're writing curriculum, you're making plans, especially a lot of the Sunday school stuff, because I wrote a lot of curriculum. I did a lot of creative stuff. And I did that while you guys were all home.
yes.
And I stayed home, and that was awesome. And then I kind of accidentally had an opportunity to go back and teach Spanish to kids. That was almost an accident, because I was thinking I wanted to go back to teaching. Allie was, you know, in elementary school, and I was looking ahead to doing it when she was in middle school. And I talked to a friend, and I was planning to do ESL again. And I talked to a friend, and she said, well, do you want to teach Spanish? And Spanish was actually required in New Jersey then.
Okay.
Or a language in elementary school. So I had also thought about that, but I thought, nah. And I said, well, you know, I've been thinking about it. And she said, no, I mean, do you really want to teach, like, next week? And I said, what? And they had happened to have had a teacher that left after day one because she didn't like the schedule. And because I had done some bilingual education in my master's degree, I had the right credentials that they could turn into a certified teacher. Huh. So that's how I got back into. Actually, I started as a sub. I had to quit because they found somebody. Fortunately for me, the next year, another person quit.
Okay.
And then I got the job permanently.
Okay.
So that's how I got it. And then I taught kids Spanish, which was probably my favorite teaching job.
Right. And then tell me about how Literacy Lab came about.
Literacy Lab came about because when your dad decided to work in two places, New York and Florida, it didn't work with the teacher schedule. And it was kind of his turn to stop commuting for 2.5 hours a day. So we moved, kind of spent most of our time in Florida. And after a year of, you know, getting adjusted, I was trying to figure out what to do next. And I'd always had this great idea that we could transfer books from kids who had them to kids who didn't. It was kind of the simplest of the idea. And so I kept telling, I said I was going to go back to school, or I was going to spend the money I'd spend on going back to school to buy a van. And one night I was looking online and I saw the van that I had identified as the right one to create kind of a bookmobile.
Right.
That could carry all my stuff.
So kind of like a nonprofit bookmobile.
Yeah. And I went to look at it the next day. I said, I'm going to jump off this bridge right now. And I bought the van. And that was the start of the Lit Lab, really.
And tell me about what you do in the Lit Lab.
Well, with the Lit Lab, I really started seriously with the idea that you had to get books into kids' homes. Mm-hmm. So that was the reason. And then the reason for the van was that I wanted it to be a really fun thing that when I drove up to a school, kids would recognize and kind of go, mm-hmm. oh, it's Friday, the Lit Lab's here, I'm going to bring my books to give to the Lit Lab. And then I'd drive it over to another school and I would give away the books, which isn't actually what the Lit Lab turned into being, because I decided, well, then working with you, which was awesome.
So, full disclosure, I was in library school at the time and then got part of the Lit Lab topic. But I'm kind of curious for other people who are listening
and
to find out about it.
Well, and really, you were also one of the founders. So that was cool. But I kind of quickly realized that the transferring wasn't really easy to do, but I was still really motivated to get books into schools that needed them. Mm-hmm. So that was probably the biggest change, as my original idea was to transfer them, to get them from a wealthy school district or a wealthy school or a church or whatever, and transfer them. And I find that people give them to me, but I mainly get books myself through Goodwill and wherever. And then the bigger change was that I added we did it together started adding the storytelling. Mm-hmm. So basically, for those of you who have not heard of the Lit Lab, we do a lot of programming where we do storytelling, puppetry, anything that gets kids to really love or have a love for reading.
Yep.
So we do a little program that's very entertaining. I dress up crazy with a green wig, which is one of the best parts, because inevitably a kid says, that's not your real hair. And I deny it vehemently, although it is lime green and scratchy. And my brown hair is usually peeking out and they go, oh, I see your brown hair. So that's really fun. But I do have a character. And we do the storytelling, and then we give them books at the end of the program. So that's kind of the model we've been following. The best part was you and I took the first trip from Seattle down to Florida, and we kind of just connected, remember, you know, else, we connected to people that we knew, basically, wherever we felt there was a good need for books, actually, where there were Title I schools or, you know, Head Start program. We went to foster agencies. We did quite a bit of things, and we had some great we had some really good times with that. So
great. Well, one of the reasons I'm really excited about interviewing you, besides the fact that you're my mom and my creative inspiration, is that you've had kind of a different sort of path than some teachers have had, where, you know, you might go to a school and stay there for 20 years. So some of the questions, this is just meant to be a conversation, but I think it's cool because you can kind of see the different ways that people can be teachers. So I'll jump right in. What's rewarding about being a teacher? Why do you like it?
I like it because I love to watch kids light up with, you know, with when they get it.
Yeah.
When you can, and for me, a lot of it is I love to inspire kids to love something, to love to learn something. That's for me the highlight.
Yeah.
You know, to have a kid who suddenly says, that's, you know, this is the best book I've ever read, or, you know, wants to tell you everything they know about something. So that to me is probably the most rewarding part of teaching.
Yeah. There's no feeling like it. And then kind of thinking back to either when you first became a teacher or as you've transitioned into different roles as teachers, what have been early challenges or new challenges for you as a teacher?
Well, my first challenge really was procedural. I mean, really, I remember it was hilarious because I was teaching English to foreign students, but I wrote everything down the first year. I mean, I used to teach with drill and practice. And so, you know, it would be the old, none of you young teachers would even recognize this, but you would say, I went to the bank, to the school. And then the kids would say, I went to the school. Uh-huh. You'd say, to the park. And then they'd say, I went to the park. Uh-huh. And I'd actually write down each of those words.
Yep.
So I look back at that. But the challenge was really getting comfortable with my material.
Right.
And being able to go in. And I always laugh. I say the first year I took in these elaborately written out cards. And the second year I taught, I could grab a stack of pictures off of a table and go in and teach.
Yep.
And so that was quite a transition. But, it, you know, in the beginning, I think for most teachers, or at least for me, it really is that, you know, you've had all this academic material.
Yeah.
And then you go in and, you know, there are 25, or in my case, there were fewer, they were adults, but they're looking at you and you just kind of go, oh, I have to start.
Yeah.
And it's, you know.
So what helped you, what helped you become a better teacher? Like, was it practice or was it other teachers or was it a combination
of lots
of things?
You know, it's definitely a combination. Okay. I think in the beginning it's experience, it's practice. Particularly the first year, I really think it's practice because you have to get comfortable. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you're going from a body of knowledge or information to actually bringing it alive. And that's really, really different. Yeah. So, but once you've practiced for 1 or 2 years, then I think you really get the most from other teachers or from sharing ideas and, you know, from being passionate and always looking. So me, the key to kind of getting to advancing your teaching is really that you're so passionate. You're always, I mean, it's a puzzle. You know, it's like, my gosh, they didn't get it. So what do I do now? And, you know, you have to be on top of your body of information as well.
Yeah.
I mean, I was lucky in a way because when I taught English, because it was my language and I was teaching the language part and not so much the, you know, yes, I had to look up grammar, but that was probably a little easier than, say, you know, a math teacher who's has to really be confident about the information.
Like the material. Okay.
You know, the material. Where when I started, you know, I could speak English, so it was a little easier maybe for me to feel confident. And I noticed that when I started teaching Spanish, that I was not as confident about my Spanish. So it took me a while to kind of get up to speed with Spanish because I was like, oh, it didn't come as naturally.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to make some mistakes or whatever.
And did you get, I guess in the different scenarios you've been in, did you get support? Where did you feel the more support coming from? Or was it more an internal motivator?
I was probably most motivated internally or myself. I always had a passion for teaching and language in particular. However, I learned a lot of great ideas from other teachers. So that to me is really also really fun because you go and you see what someone else is doing. You're like, oh, that's so cool. I want to do that.
Yeah.
And now I have a million of those kinds of things that I can think back and think of, oh yeah, there was that teacher who taught me to, you know, jump a frog across the board so the kids could reach a goal and just fun stuff like that.
Right, right. Were there any things that surprised you about teaching? And this, once again, could be in any of the different arenas because you've taught adults, you've taught in public schools, you're now doing a really program where you're working collaboratively with people. So, but yeah, are there any things that particularly surprised you?
I think maybe what surprised me the most more recently, I'm sure a lot surprised me way back when, but but I had always thought that I had to stop at fifth grade because I wasn't...
Like personally, you had to stop?
Well, because I wasn't cool, to be honest. I wasn't a cool... I never was cool. I was always pretty much of a goody two-shoes or a nerdy kid. So I never really thought I would do well with middle school or high school. And so I... With the Lit Lab, this really happened more with the Lit Lab. I really didn't intend to work with that age group.
Yeah.
And I've had a couple experiences that really have changed my thinking about that. I think I'm still best in the younger ages, but but I've realized a lot of kids just want somebody who will pay attention. They don't care if you are cool. They don't care if you, you know, look really hip. Yeah. Even though you think they do, and they do tend to love teachers who do. I mean, you know, they love, but they also just, they can really like a teacher who just takes time to listen to their opinion and respect what they do.
Right.
I think I've been surprised that by the challenges of management, classroom management and behavioral management.
Yeah.
Because you keep trying something and it... You know, I still don't have a system where I would say, "Oh, let me tell you how to manage the behavior of the students in your class." I find that really an interesting challenge, and I probably wouldn't have guessed that I'm sure I thought that I would come up with the right plan, and then it would just be miraculous, and they would all do what I wanted.
Are there any tips and tricks, particularly with classroom management, that you've found have helped you hone your craft? Or that you would recommend trying for other people?
I really actually recommend, I tried a system 1 year, actually it was a professional development year. It was a goal I had. I was able to get my, you know, professional development credits for that year or whatever. But it was a system really where you made you gave the kids ownership of their behavior. And you took away all bribery.
Okay.
Which was really hard because bribery I had used quite a bit and it was very common school I was at. But I did find it was, and the whole system's much too complicated to explain, but it was kind of, you would teach kids to recognize their own behavior and then they were supposed to call out like anarchy if they were out of control. But I found that they really responded pretty well to taking responsibility themselves. And I pulled back a lot on bribery. However, then later I realized that there's a place for, I call it bribery motivation. I'm sure they're politically correct words for it.
Fine, this is just a conversation.
But I actually think that bribery works also quite well. I tend to really prefer group stuff. I really don't like
working towards things.
I like group goals. I think the older I get, the more I see that kids, there's so much competition in their worlds that I'm not sure we need to have as much as we have in the school situation.
So like individuals competing in class.
I think we often don't recognize the kids who really get hurt by that. They get lost. We see the ones that it benefits, but we don't really see the ones that really feel terrible because they're not chosen, because they never win. And I think the longer my career went on, the more of a heart I feel for those kids that just kind of experience failure most of their time. And also kids that have home situations we have no clue about.
Right.
So when you're doing these competitions that they really can't do, or it's hard for them.
Yeah.
So I kind of struggle most with that and kind of how you balance, you know, kids like to have a game, a competition.
Yeah.
So that's
cool. And I just want you to think of now of a time when you felt like a really great teacher. And it could be a specific moment or it could be a series of things. But I don't know. What's an example of something you've done that made you feel like a really good teacher?
There were probably two that really I loved so much when I was teaching Spanish. One was I decided to do a play with second grade. Uh-huh. And my Spanish kids knew almost nothing. I mean, they had Spanish for 20 minutes a week or half hour a week. And it wasn't enough time to really give them a lot of Spanish. But I thought, well, they needed some motivation to speak. So I adapted some plays and I painted this huge backdrop in the garage. And they made masks. And they just had a reason to talk.
Uh-huh.
And even I remember one little kid who got, at the last minute, cried because she didn't want to be in the play. And so I said, fine, you know, we won't worry about it. And then came back the next day and said her lines, you know, with such power. So that was really cool because it was this very simple. All I needed to get them to say was so little. And yet they saw the reason for talking.
Okay.
Because it was a play. And that was really, I would do that lesson again 10 times, you know.
Were they performing for other students?
We performed for other classes. Okay. And I think we did invite their parents. And they were so proud of it and what they did. So that, and it really was a purpose to speak. Yeah. So that was cool. And then actually also teaching Spanish, I did it's called many things, but I called it a living statue.
Oh, okay.
With my fifth graders.
Okay.
And it was the same thing where I let them all pick a character and they could bring their props in, and they had such a purpose to speak that it was the best I had seen them do in Spanish. So those were my Spanish successes. Yeah, yeah. You know, they were really, I think, you know, you always feel the best when some kid comes up and is just, you know, enamored of the thing that you just did.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's they want to show you the mask they just created. You know, or you see them. I used to love it when I'd see kids actually out and about and they would whisper, and my youngest, Allie, could attest to this because she'd see them and they go, "Oh, it's Senora Sterling," you know, and then, and then they might say, you know, "Buenos dias" or something. They'd be so startled that I'd be out and about.
And my next question is kind of the opposite. And not as much, is there anything that's made you feel like a bad teacher? Because that's a terrible question. But are there any moments that didn't go quite as planned? And then what do you do? What do you do with that?
I had a lot of moments that didn't go as planned. I think all teachers do, actually.
Yeah. I think all people do, probably, in everything.
For me, one of the more common ones, if I just think kind of briefly, I like really elaborate plans. I mean, I would take 30 puppets and, you know, want every kid to use a puppet. And, and so sometimes that didn't work. And one of the times I do remember was I was teaching the, you know, farm animals or something. But I had these little chicks that peeped, you know, that hold in your hand. And I wasn't thinking that once a first grader holds that chicken in their hand, really all they care about is the chicken and not the Spanish that goes with it. And so I did have to learn to kind of tone down my props a little bit. You know, I had some lessons that just fell totally flat. One time I had a lesson, actually, I was being observed, where because I ran from classroom to classroom, I had grabbed the wrong material. It was a third grade class. And all I had grabbed was a roll of paper. Because with the fourth grade, they were ready to do some backdrop.
Right.
And so I only had a roll of paper. And I look back and there's my supervisor ready to watch my lesson. Well, no, so I couldn't run back and get the right stuff. And actually, I made up one of the best lessons I ever had. But it was a very disconcerting moment, you know, when you realize you don't have what you needed.
So what was the lesson you made up?
You know, I made up a lesson where they had to create, because I was like, and we were already working with animals, which I did a lot, mm-hmm. but I had them create a habitat and then identify what they had drawn, and we did some wonderful group stuff. And I mean, it turned out okay.
Uh-huh.
But, and then I had some lessons where they just, you know, I was trying to go too fast. Uh-huh. I think that's a common thing too.
Yeah.
You know, you just, and you don't want, you know, you feel the pressure of having mm-hmm. to get to a certain point right, and the kids right. just aren't there.
Yeah, yeah.
So you go forward and then you look out. And mm-hmm. I do say that a really good teacher can look out and know when you've lost your kids.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a good feeling when you don't have another plan. But I think it is, from everything I've observed, the best teachers have a really good instinct for that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know, you just kind of look out and realize either they've fallen asleep or you've lost them somehow.
Yeah. And are there any strategies you have in the back of your head of, if you've lost them, what do you do?
You know, I think your first, you know, it's really good if you've identified your goals for the lesson. I mean, mm-hmm. that's a practice that I think has come, they've started to put a little more emphasis on. It's a little right. bit of a pain in the neck.
Yeah.
But I found it helped me when I had to start writing. I didn't have to write lesson plans early in my career as right. much as I did later. And it would kind of help me to just stop and say, oh, well, this is what I wanted. You know, my goal today was that they were going to, you know, be able to identify these 10 words.
Uh-huh.
And then kind of take a deep breath and change the strategy.
Okay.
So I
to
think
still get at that goal. I think it's, think of a different way to do it.
Yeah. And I think it's always good to have some thought or some mm-hmm. standard, some things you do well
uh-huh.
that you can almost rely on naturally.
Right.
You know, whether it's drills that you are comfortable with. For mm-hmm. me, it was puppet work. Sometimes I would uh-huh. just take a puppet and go back to the basic a little uh-huh. bit.
Cool.
So, but I think actually having some backup yeah. thought or just a backup idea
yeah.
is a good thing, especially for new teachers.
Yes.
You know, just
or sometimes they do things way faster than you think they will. And so you have this like extra time.
I think having a couple backups. Simple, even everything you teach has some vocabulary. I mean, if you uh-huh. just even have you know, a set of cards with the vocabulary on it.
Uh-huh.
And a few simple games in mind, you know, right, all of a right. sudden you can hand out everybody a card or have them pantomime it or something. And uh-huh. that's just a way to be able to regain a little bit of what you're, you know, what's gone awry.
And kind of in this conversation, I'm thinking of people who want to become teachers or are thinking of it either right off of college or as a second career or, that they just value it. Do you have any advice for people who are thinking about becoming teachers now?
I do. Think as creatively as you can. Mm-hmm. I mean, don't get discouraged because right now I think I hear a lot of negatives about, oh, mm-hmm. you don't want to teach because there's a lot of meetings, there's a lot of this. And there right. is, there's yep. a lot of challenges. But I think if you have a passion for it, you're going to find the good things. Uh-huh. If you can't let, the other thing I would say is, if you can't let some of the bureaucracy, some mm-hmm. of the meetings you're going to hate, if you can't yeah. let that, I don't know, I use the word wash over you or I don't know what it is. If you can't live with that,
yeah.
then maybe teaching isn't for you because mm-hmm. it's an inevitable part of it.
Right.
But if you can... If you focus on the kids,
yeah,
and if when you're with a group of kids, you feel like you've come alive because you have something you want to give to them or teach to them or pass uh-huh. to them, the other will kind of, you'll be able to deal with it.
Uh-huh.
Get a good friend you can complain to. Teacher's happy hours are good. But you really do have to be able to just put up with some of that stuff.
Uh-huh.
You know, and also learn strategies to have, you know, don't do it all.
Yeah.
You know, you can't do it all. There's never an end. Mm-hmm. You know, there's always a paper you can correct, and every teacher I know works really hard.
Right.
Most teachers worked harder than I had to because I didn't have homework a lot to correct. I did a lot of creation, but less homework correction.
Yeah.
But you do have to cut it off. You have to have students correct mm-hmm. their own homework. You have to find strategies. Look to experienced teachers to find those time-saving strategies because yeah. you also need a life of right. your own, mm-hmm. and you can.
Yeah.
You know, you can have it, but you know, don't lose sight of the passion. It's I love it. I mean, it's just I would still be there.
Yeah,
you know, with a group of kids, you go and you get re-energized by that.
Yeah.
So I think most people who really are going to stick with teaching probably have some. I'm sure they have a lot better strategies to impart, but it's probably from the same source. That if you have a passion for the kids, mm-hmm. you know, but take care of yourselves.
Right. Great. And I guess you've kind of already addressed it, but what would you say if there's one thing you'd say was the best part about teaching?
The kids.
Was there anything?
Okay. The kids. I mean, it's the kids. And it's the watching the brain develop.
Yeah.
Is if you're a teacher, you love that. You know, you see it develop. You see kids develop their thinking.
Mm-hmm.
The creativity. I mean, I love the creativity. So that yeah. is a challenge, I think, today. Because of all the testing. So, mm-hmm. you know, I hope we all kind of make sure that that stays part of teaching. Because I think that's what feeds teachers as well.
Yeah, you know? I agree. That's why you inspired me to become one. Well, thanks. That's the questions that I have for you. I really appreciate you coming on my show.
You are welcome. All right.
Bye. Bye.
Yeah!
That's the end of my show. Thanks for listening. You can find future episodes on adequateyearlyprogress.com and iTunes. Thanks to the band Inspira's song, Follow the Waves, for the upbeat music you are dancing to right now. Thanks to freesound.org for the Creative Commons license for user SBYANDIJI's alarm bell sound, user Tokyo's yeah sound, and user Mental Sanity Off for the background chatter sound. Thanks to all of you for listening, and talk to you next in a couple weeks.